Welcome to Mind the Gap by Fresh Chat, a podcast where experts and hustlers share their stories on growth, marketing, and customer experience. I'm Abhishek, and I'm your host for the day.
Sujin Patel is the co-founder of Web Profits, a growth marketing agency helping companies leverage the latest and the greatest marketing strategies. In the past, he has led digital marketing strategies for companies like Salesforce, Mint, Intuit, and several others. When he's not working for 13 hours a day and 6 days a week, you can find him racing cars or motorcycles or even jumping out of a plane. This podcast is going to be all about growth, content, and even better, looking at content as a growth engine. Today's podcast will be taken over by Divya. Divya was an entrepreneur who turned into a content wizard and now takes care of product marketing for Fresh Chat. She also runs Stop the Mandals, where she hustles to bring equality for women in tech.
Hi, Sujin. Welcome to Fresh Chat's Mind the Gap.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Very, very excited to talk to you today.
Awesome. I'm excited as well. Just to start off with, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I run a couple things. I run a company called Ramp Ventures. We own and operate about 7 SaaS companies in the sales and marketing space. I also run a digital marketing agency called Web Profits. And so between those two, I get a pretty wide range of different types of companies I get to work with, from e-commerce to SaaS to education and whatnot. So I get a lot of different, I get to have a lot of fun and test all different types of things and strategies. So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Nice. So do you want to talk to us a little bit about Mailshake as well?
Yeah. So Mailshake is probably our most notable brand in the Ramp Ventures portfolio. We're an outbound sales tool. We allow people to do cold emails, send follow-up emails and whatnot. So really just kind of an email tool. It allows you to send a cadence and whatnot. And that kind of came out of my own need back in 2015 to set up cadences and whatnot that for a company I was working for. And so I couldn't find anything out there that was really simple to use. And so that's kind of what we ended up doing.
Nice. I guess those are the best kind of stories, right? And those are the best kind of products. So let's dive right into the questions for the day. So I'm going to start off by asking you about thank you marketing. So you've spoken about thank you marketing before. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you've done something like this with your business and what it has resulted in?
Yeah, so pretty much, let's just start by defining what this is, because I think there's a lot of people who kind of noise around thank you marketing, customer delight, and, you know, really customer success. But the way I look at this is really just making sure your customers have a really good experience with your brand and, you know, giving them more than just an online experience. So, you know, everybody, you know, you might be a SaaS brand, you might be a brand and you have companies buying from you, but at the end of the day, you know, there's people behind both companies, and it's the kind of scope around thank you marketing is to connect, to create a human connection between those two human beings and proactively showing that you care. So, you know, for example, you know, why do people wear Nikes over Adidas, over Under Armour? You know, yeah, partly is the shoes, but a lot of it is the brand, is the experience, is the exposure, it's the perceived value. So, you know, Nike hosts a lot of different running, you know, they have running clubs, they throw marathons, they have different events for males and females. And so, you know, that might be, that's like, could be one reason to go buy Nike shoes or Nike products versus Adidas, right? And so what does it have to do with the quality of the shoe? Absolutely nothing. And that's really the point of doing this. This strategy is to go beyond kind of just what your software, what your product can do, and go into what you as a company can provide. So a quick example of what we do at Mailshake and a couple of my other companies is that we help not just allow people to do cold emails or send emails, but we're trying to proactively help them send better emails, get better results. So our customers technically would use our product to write and send email sequences. But what keeps them around, what keeps them going, and what makes them successful is getting responses, is getting deals closed, is, you know, getting success. And so By what we can do is essentially proactively monitor if somebody's getting bad results based off their average or kind of underperforming campaigns, or their copy is too long and things like that. We can proactively prevent them from kind of shooting themselves in the foot based off of kind of our industry knowledge. And so, you know, doing that at scale is really the challenge. But I would suggest starting with, like, how can you help? Think about, like, how can you help your customers be more successful?
Nice. So do you mean to say that Mailshake as a tool helps them proactively change their type of emails, maybe quantify abstract values like empathy and things like that? Or how does the tool work as such? Like, what sort of inputs do you add from your side?
Yeah, so, you know, we've got the luxury. So, you know, I've sent millions and millions of emails in the past from a PR and link building perspective, and hundreds of thousands from the sales perspective are from my organization. And then Mailshake has sent close to 50, 60 million emails. And as an aggregate, we have lots of, from my experience, and I have a lot of qualitative knowledge on what works, what doesn't. From a Mailshake perspective, we have a lot of data on what works, what doesn't, you know, what resonates, what gets better responses. And so a lot of our tools, this is what we have a call campaign review, which is a manual review, which essentially, this is where customers, as they're writing the email, is like, I'm stuck, I don't know what to say, or they've sent a campaign, and we can go and our customer success team will go review their content, kind of give them feedback and pointers. But then there's the automated feedback that we have, kind of a simple machine learning, I don't want to call it AI, but a simple program that is, if you're writing, you know, for example, if you're writing your copy, your content is too long, we're going to flag that. So we found that, you know, short paragraphs, short emails work better. If you say any keywords that we think we've seen that have been negative keywords, not necessarily from like your email is marked as spam, but your email is, it just doesn't resonate well with the recipient. Or, you know, one really, really simple example is most people, when they write cold emails, they talk about themselves first. But when the person opens an email, they're reading this email. It's like, what am I going to get from this? What does this email, what is this email about? They need to be sold. They may not spend any more than a few seconds thinking about this email. And if you talk about writing about yourself, you're losing them from the beginning. And so we have certain flags, and we'll give you, you know, warnings of like, hey, don't start. If you start by like saying, I want to introduce myself, and this is what we do, and you talk about your company, we're going to start flagging that and give you advice and recommendations on, hey, why don't you create copy that is getting them engaged, and then talk about yourself. So little things like that, to me, are common knowledge because we do this, we live and breathe this stuff, but to the end user might be a little counterintuitive.
That's just great. So because you were talking about content now, I just want to move a little bit and talk about content itself as a growth engine. What do you suggest a startup should do today to win at content marketing? Like, there's no dearth of content around, right? So what would be your advice for a startup in terms of content marketing? How do they ace content marketing?
Yeah, and so I always think about the customer first. And this is kind of, you're going to hear a theme in our conversation today. It's all about the customer and providing, what can you do to provide value at a single instance, and then how can you scale that is, you know, the secondary thing. So think about your customer and what are the problems that they face, or challenges, or things that they do throughout their day. So for example, Mailshake, we've got PR, people doing PR, we've got marketers, we've got salespeople. Let's just kind of isolate the salespeople for a second. So what do salespeople do? They use Mailshake, hopefully, or they use a tool, maybe a competitor. They're on the phone a lot. They're using a CRM. They're updating the things. They're in meetings. They're doing demos. They're doing a lot of different things, right? So sure, we can talk about how to write the best cold emails in the world. But what's the objective of a salesperson? Their goal is to close deals. And that's how they get paid. That's how they keep their jobs and get commissions and strive and grow their careers. So if we talked about our content all around the how to help customers, how to help a salesperson close more deals, how to help them actually succeed in their role, maybe how to save time, or like maybe how to use automation or Zapier to kind of better transfer data from Mailshake or equivalent software to their CRM so they have everything synced up. That's going to make their day better. And so that's an example of some content ideas. Now, when you match at a high level, when you match your customers' problems or things that they would be challenges or things they do about go about doing throughout their day, I start with challenges because those are things people are looking for, more actively looking for. Combine that with doing keyword research and finding out the biggest keywords in the industry, and you marry the two. So you find and you write about content that your customers have the biggest challenges with that also has high volume, that are also high volume search keywords. And there you have a very good starting point of, you know, how to do to create content. And again, this content, because it also is a challenge, the topics you're writing about is because it's a challenge or something that your persona does day to day. It's also more in line with being down better equipped to actually convert the customer. But a lot of people think like, I want to create content and I want to create content that can convert my customer. But you don't start there. You end there. You start by creating content that can add value, building a brand. You know, our blog gets over 100,000 visitors a month, and it doesn't convert as high as I would want it. But we've got so much content that helps educate the market. And we found that over time, it does convert over the course of a year, 6 months, 12 months, 2 years, it ends up building our brand and our word of mouth and our other content is our organic traffic is going up. So I would start by building up the basis. And I'd go back to the example of Nike, right? How does throwing a marathon help get conversions? It doesn't. It helps people buy into the brand. It helps people do what they do with the shoes that they wear, buy from Nike, right? And so that's the same thing with content. It's not about getting them creating bottom of the funnel content. It's about starting with the top of the funnel content, maybe then going into maybe signing them up to your newsletter, maybe even creating an email drip campaign that can teach people how to do something better. And then at the end of those types of newsletters or emails, you can then, you know, sell them a little harder on your product. So that's kind of how I would go about doing this.
Nice. That makes a lot of sense. So I guess when you talk about content and top of the funnel content as such, moving on to, I think, one of our favorite topics, you know, cold emails. And I think sales guys do that, SDR does that, marketers do that, content writers. And I think everybody writes cold emails and everyone talks about it. But, you know, it's the most difficult thing to crack, right? So based on your insights from people using it and based on inputs from users, what do you think are the most important elements of sending a really good cold email?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, it has to get someone's attention. I think it's subject line, that is a question. If you can ask to get somebody engaged, I think a question is a really, really good way to do that. Posing a problem and kind of getting them to kind of nod, yeah, I do have that problem. Then I think the rest of the email can get, then I think people would actually read the rest of the email. I think after that, you get a hook. It's all about getting a conversation started. And so I think a lot of people think, and when they write emails, they're writing about, you know, they're writing a long kind of thing. They're explaining what they do. They're introducing themselves. And realistically, when you open your email, the longer it is, the less likely, even if it's from a colleague I know or like my team members, whatever, the longer the email, the harder it is to read, even from people you know. So same thing goes and even amplified for you know, people you don't know. So short and sweet emails, I think 3 to 5 sentences, getting the conversation started is really the only point. If you can get them to respond, then I think is really the where you can go and then further explain what the heck it is you do, what you're selling, what have you, making it very convenient. So, but also not too automated. So, for example, a lot of people would put like, let's say they're trying to book a meeting. At the end, their call to action would be, "Oh, book a time on my calendar." Well, that seems kind of ingenuine. But what you can say is like, hey, are you available for a quick chat next week, next Wednesday? Or if it's easier, book a time on my calendar. Very simple. I offered a time. And then if they're not, likely they're going to go and book a time on my calendar, but it doesn't seem genuine there. And the last part of what makes a good cold email, so we talked about getting engagement and getting people's attention up front, short, sweet emails, being automated or making it easy, but not genuine. And the last part is having a very, very clear call to action. This is where I think most people mess up. They write a beautiful email, even if you write the best email in the world. If you have multiple call to actions or you don't have a clear call to action, it's very, very, you add friction, you make the person think a little too much and they may not know what to do. So my biggest feedback is have one clear call to action, kind of like what you would do on a landing page. On a landing page, you don't say, go purchase, book a demo, like sign up for a free trial, chat, live chat. Like usually when you're doing paid campaigns, your funnel, you have one call to action and then everything may be secondary. Well, in an email, you don't have much time for secondary things because to say something meaningful in 3 to 5 sentences as short as possible while engaging them and making it convenient is a very hard task. And so just keeping one clear call to action. And if you have any like social proof, anything you want to include, I recommend using your email signature for that. So for example, instead of introducing myself, hi, I'm Sujan Patel. I run Mailshake, an automated sales tool. I would just jump to the point of what I want the person to kind of to engage. And in my signature, I would say, thanks, Sujan Patel, co-founder, Mailshake, used by 21,000 customers worldwide. Used by 21,000 sales, marketing, and PR agents worldwide. Now, that in my signature is social proof. I've said 21,000 salespeople, and it quickly says what I do, but it's not the starting point. If somebody's interested in the first sentence of what I say, I got them engaged, they might like quickly scroll to my signature, and it's scannable. So I think the last part is making it scannable.
Nice. So I'm just going to ask you another question here in terms of cold emails again. Now that, you know, personalization is being preferred as a trend and it's one of the most important elements of keeping your audience engaged, be it an email or, any other source of engagement. So what are your thoughts on personalization? Do you think it's possible for us to sort of personalized cold emails as well, because it's usually sent on a large scale. What are your views on personalization as a trend in terms of emailing?
Yeah, so I think personalization is absolutely necessary. However, I think there's a simple way to go about personalizing. So let's give you a hypothetical. Let's say I'm a salesperson, I'm using Mailshake, I'm doing cold email, and I'm emailing, I'm selling some sort of service, let's say, I'm emailing accountants, I'm emailing lawyers, I'm emailing SaaS CEOs, and I'm selling some, let's just say, a magical pill to get more profit, right? And let's not worry about what it is I'm selling. I'm talking to SaaS CEOs, accountants, lawyers. Accountants and lawyers. Now, personalization doesn't have to be like, I have to include the person's city, I have to include how many customers they have. But if I'm talking to an accountant, if I'm talking to a lawyer, and if I'm talking to a SaaS CEO, the language of which I use is very, very different. And so the examples I use of like why I'm reputable are very, very different. Accountants, you may want to be more social proof, a bit more formal language that you use. Same thing with lawyers. With SaaS CEOs, they get emails all the time. Maybe they're more likely to be tech savvy. You can probably include a couple of links. And you want to maybe be short and sweet, and maybe probably SaaS CEOs get a lot of cold emails. And so you're going to want to stand out. So I think it's different language that you use. Now, you could use the same type of general template of like, you get the hook, you talk about how your magic pill can make that company more profitable. But when you show an example, you can insert a SaaS example versus an accounting example versus a legal example. and maybe your sign off is a little different and whatnot. So for example, I would never ever include a link to my LinkedIn when I'm emailing a lawyer, but maybe that's what I would include that potentially to a SaaS CEO, because then they can look me up in one click and validate if I'm a legit person or not. So it's those types of things. So my signature might be changed, but it's just about being relevant to the person you're targeting. Now, so like, let's go deeper. I'm emailing SaaS CEOs of Fortune 500. You know, I'm emailing Microsoft and the public companies. I'm emailing founders of some really, really small companies. Their problems might be different. So the first sentence I use to engage that person might be different. Now, you can do it on a one-to-one level. Like, I'm emailing 500 people. I'm going to have 500 different personalized emails. That's really, really not scalable and frankly, very hard to do, but you can categorize the different type of companies. So public companies, I would say something very different. Maybe you want to make your shareholders happier. If they're $100 million plus company, I would say something different. If they're just getting started, I would dynamically insert the first sentence that says, "Hey, why not start off on the right foot?" I can, from a category level, personalize and still be hyper relevant without having to do it manually.
Wonderful. Those were like wonderful examples. Great points. So I think we're done with content. I'm going to move on a little bit into your experience building and scaling a startup. So how to grow your business from zero to MRR, you know? How do you scale your startup? What are your pointers on that?
Yeah, so I think my philosophy is really, it doesn't start when your product is ready. It actually starts prior to your product being ready. So it's all about, in my opinion, building an audience and doing pre-launch marketing. And so you have somebody, some folks, an email list, an audience that are somewhat interested in what the heck your brand is going to do. And so I always say, you know, start the day you have the idea, put up a website, start collecting emails, start creating content around the type of things you're going to, the category that you're going to be in. That way you can start to build an audience. So when you do launch, you then simply send an email and maybe that can get you 5, 10, 15 customers. The other thing about launching is also about befriending and connecting with the right influencers, the people that are the leaders in that space. So, you know, I'll give you an example. When we launched Mailshake back in 2015, we were actually we pivoted over to Mailshake. We were called contentmarketer.io and we were targeting content marketers. So what we did was we targeted content marketers and we made sure we invited them to maybe guest post on our site. We asked them, "Hey, can I give you a free account so you can play around with it?" We got them to kind of play around with the software and give us feedback, make it better. But realistically, we got them bought into what we're going to do. So when we launched, we had people ready to help us promote this. So I had people tweet, share, even one or two people emailed their email list, just letting people know maybe a specific offer, or I was able to do guest posts on other people's sites to help them help accelerate that launch. So that's what I would kind of do for just to get out there. And now let's say that's a good strategy to get your maybe first 100 customers. After about 100, you have to figure out what are the channels you're going to use to get your first 1,000. I think a lot of people focus on like, "Oh, I want to be a big SaaS company." But you know, if you're zero customers, nothing else matters besides the number 10. You need to get 10 customers. If you have 10 customers, you need to focus on 100. And going from 10 to 100 is all about grinding it out. You may have to go make cold calls. You may have to go outbound sales. From 100 to 1,000, you're going to have to put in maybe a few systems in place. So maybe content was working for you. Maybe you did get influencers involved. Can you get more of those? Can you do paid advertising? What is the one or two channels you're going to use? And I would say one, what's the one channel you're going to use to get to 1,000? And as you're kind of getting there, think about another channel and start to get that going. And so And then after about 1,000, it all changes, because now it goes from like brute force tactics and hard work to scalable channels, because some channels like the influencers or getting a few, you know, people to talk about you, that might not go that far. Like if I got 10 influencers to talk about me at the launch and it got me 100 customers, you know, and let's say that was the thing that got me 100 customers, maybe they don't have the reach to get me another 1,000. So you have to think about what are the scalable type of channels that you can use after that. And it kind of goes back to the basics of marketing. You know, there's sales, you know, the outbound cold calls, what have you, cold emails. There's content marketing. There's SEO. I kind of lump those two together. There's PPC, anything paid advertising, influencer marketing. You know, if you're thinking about building a referral program when you're early on, think again, because, you know, referral programs only work when you have a mass amount of users. So maybe there's, you know, building micro tools in your product and whatnot. But I think it kind of goes back to the basics of like, think about the core channels that you can use to grow a company and hack or figure out one way to do that.
Awesome. I think that's brilliant advice. So again, out of curiosity, if I were to ask you, do you have any one idea or one learning or, you know, probably one failure out of which you learned something, that one thing that you would attribute to and, you know, one thing that really changed your life while scaling a startup?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I learned really early on, not early enough, was that, you know, building a product in a big category with a total addressable market that can scale or that is big enough as a very important lesson. So when we first built Mailshake, it was called contentmarketer.io. It was an outreach tool. That was one part of it. We did a lot more things, and it was really geared towards content marketers. Well, it turns out, content marketers is a decent sized category, but the sales category is much, much bigger. And the SEO link building market is fairly small, but what we found is it's shrinking over the last 10 years because people are kind of going from SEOs to all things marketing. And so they're not only focused on just SEO. So what I learned early on was our total addressable market was very, very small. And as a result, we were able to grow, but we got stuck really, really fast because we were reaching, you know, decent market penetration, but the market was too small. And so, you know, I look at this now, you know, being much, much smarter and learning some really, really hard lessons that if you're going to do something, you might as well do something in a big industry, because it's the same effort to do something small as it is something, you know, large. And so, you know, that's one of the causes of the reasons why we pivoted over and changed our brand and everything like that, and re-geared our tools to be focused on the sales space, because the sales space is 1,000 times bigger than the amount of content marketing people there are, because it's just a big, much more wider use. And also there was revenue attached to it. So we can be an awesome tool to help marketers do their job better, or we can be an awesome tool to help salespeople close deals and generate revenue. When people remember tools and things that help them generate revenue. And so by shifting over to that, which took us, I want to say 18 long months to realize that before we actually pulled the trigger or were able to make the shift.
Wow, that's really interesting. Nice. So, I think my final question in terms of, you know, just talking about grown-up marketing as such, you know, let's talk a little bit about marketing tech stack. So growth marketers use several tools today, you know, in this tech stack. They probably have Mailshake. They have things like Phantom Buster, DuckSoup, and so on. Can you suggest a tech stack for someone who's an online marketer?
Yeah, so let's talk about the content marketer tech stack, because I think that's a much more similar, simple one. So I would say, you know, I bucket this into, you need tools to help you do research, things like SEMrush, Ahrefs, and some of these tools overlap, BuzzSumo. All of these tools help you identify keywords and topics that you would want to write about. I think those are very, very important to do your research and make sure that you do this. I think LinkedIn is another part, a good one as well. And how to use LinkedIn as a content marketer to build relationships with other people selling to your customer. So it's just pinging them, getting on the phone, not very tech savvy, not very high tech or sexy, but good old fashioned relationships. And if I look back at my 10 years of doing marketing, for 14 years of doing marketing, the last 10 years, the biggest success I've got came from relationships that helped open doors and things like that and whatnot. So I think that's a very, very important thing as a content marketer to do. Now it's all about, let's talk about, you've got the topics to write about, you got the, you've done the research. I would use something like ProBlog or Job Board to go and find writers. We use Trello. I recommend that to manage topics, workflow, and communication with the writing team, or if you have full-time employees, what have you. So very, very important. I think Google Docs, there's a cool tool called Wordable. Wordable helps take a Google Doc from like a blog post that's written in a Google Doc, because frankly, that's much easier for a writer to do than to put it into WordPress or what have you, and puts it automatically uploads into WordPress and uploads all the images, and essentially just saves a lot of time. So that's a really neat tool. And then I think after, let's say you've written the content, it's all about the promotion. So a little shameless plug here, Qpromote, Q-U-U.co, promote. Great tool. I'm a part owner in this, but really it's a great tool to get your content out there, so you can submit it and it'll get shared by people who are in that, like who are following that industry. So it can get shared by hundreds to thousands of people, depending on the category that you're in. So I subscribe to the marketing thing. So if you submitted something in the marketing and the Q team reviewed it and approved it, I would be sharing it out on my social channels, and you can get lots of different influencers as well. But scheduling tweets. So you can use something like Buffer, you can use Hootsuite, whatever you use, share that content out multiple times over the course of 3 to 6 months. And then Mailshake, obviously, or any type of tool to help you go do outreach. Go email the people you reference in the article, email people that were influencers on the topic, so you can maybe get a quote, maybe get their feedback, what have you, and start building those relationships. I think those are really the key tools from start to finish of an article or start to finish of content that you want to use to be successful.
Wonderful. That's a wonderful suggestion from yours in terms of marketing tech stack. Sujan, we're going to enter into the lighter side of this podcast. So if you're ready, let's begin by hearing about one thing weird about you.
So I think there's a lot of weird things about me. I think I would say the most obvious one, I have broken 18 bones in my life. A lot of them as a kid from doing just dumb stuff and snowboarding and motorcycles. But yeah, lots of broken bones.
Okay.
I haven't broken a bone in probably 2 years. So knock on wood that it stays that way.
Nice. So yes, touch wood. All right. So moving on to, why don't you tell us what are your favorite apps? Probably a couple of them.
Yeah, my favorite apps, I think things I use every single day. I use Evernote for taking notes. I use Slack. I absolutely live in inside of Slack to communicate with different members of my team and whatnot. One of my, I would say, lesser known kind of tools and it's not related to marketing, is MyFitnessPal. I use that to track kind of my exercise, calories, what have you. Kind of trying to be hold accountable to what I eat, what I consume, and that kind of helps me stay sharp. And again, like it's like putting in those metrics that I live by in real life for the day to day that's not marketing. And I think the last one I want to say is not a tool, but it's a mindset. I try to leave 2 to 3 hours every single day in my workday of just open space, no task, nothing I'm trying to do, so that I can think of and have headspace to think about new marketing initiatives, new ideas. And I found that by leaving that much time, it it allows me to kind of not worry about all the things I need to do and focus on like not thinking about marketing. And when I do that, I end up coming with some really good ideas.
Nice. That's a very good list again. So I don't know if you're going to repeat your answer for this, but do you think you have a productivity hack as such, something that you could share?
Yeah, I think I would say my productivity hack is I use an app called Things, and Things is literally a, you know, the things you're working on, what do you need to do, it's a to-do list, right? And I focus on only getting three things done every single day, like three big things. Every morning, I try to start with the one thing I need to knock out. And what this helps me do is, I got this from Jeff Bezos, but three things, easy to remember. I can remember, I can and count it down on my hand. I can remember it, I can write it down. The three big things. Now, there might be like a lot of things, like I need to do emails, respond to this person, I need to go to a meeting. But like, I think if you focus on doing three of the biggest things you can do to grow your business the company you work for or marketing initiatives every day, you're really focusing on the biggest things. Those are the things that are going to help you move the needle. Never in the history of any company has there been dozens of marketing channels that drive growth. Usually it's one or two that are the main drivers. And this stays true to the biggest companies in the world. So by focusing on those three things, I'm really forcing myself to focus on the things that would most likely move the needle.
Awesome. So I think I'm going to definitely start following this because it's a great productivity hack, I must say. Three things to do. Awesome, Sujin. So my last and final question, Sujin, 10 years before and 10 years after. So what has changed in terms of your business, in terms of learning, whatever it is? So can you just compare Sujin 10 years before and then where you want to see Sujin 10 years after? So we'd probably close the podcast with this question.
Yeah, so I think what has changed a whole lot. 10 years ago, I was second year into my first business, my first endeavor at being an entrepreneur. I had no clue what I was doing. I was in my early 20s and trying to do a whole lot. I had a marketing agency I was running. But again, I was just kind of chasing money, not really, didn't have a goal, an end goal in mind. I just wanted to grow and I wanted to get more clients and what have you. But I didn't think about the how I'm going to get new clients or more clients, how I'm going to market the brand. I didn't think about what I even wanted to do with this business. I was just doing it because it was better than having a job. And that just led to me doing a lot of things for 5 years and ended up getting burned out and ended up not doing the things I wanted to do. 10 years from now, you know, I like to live, I live by a quote. If you don't, what you said last year doesn't sound completely stupid, you're not growing fast enough, right? So look back at yourself. The exact quote is from Ray Dalio. You look back at yourself a year ago and you aren't shocked about how stupid you were. You haven't learned much. And so in 10 years, I hopefully look back at my today and say, oh my God, I was completely stupid in how I was doing things. In terms of what I'm doing, I don't see that changing. I think what I'm doing with Ramp Ventures and Web Profits, I'll continue to do because I absolutely love it. I would do it for free. And for many years, I was doing it for free before we made any money.
That's a wonderful answer, Sujin. That's, I think, one of my favorite answers for today. Thank you so much for joining us. It was a wonderful, wonderful session. I guess a lot of takeaways, a lot of learnings.
Well, thank you for having me. I had a blast, some really interesting questions. And I guess in closing, I would just say, keep building relationships. I think some of the best marketing stuff was going to come from you just talking to somebody, hanging out with other marketers, going to events. So spend some time getting out there, getting out of your comfort zone and building relationships, because that's I think that's the key to professional growth in your career and help you grow your company as well.
Thank you for listening to Mind the Gap. Subscribe to our podcast at freshchat.com/mindthegap. You can check out our upcoming episodes and ask questions to our guest by sending an audio message there. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with the world. See you guys soon.